Well, now it's time for our weekly programme of traditional music on Radio 3. And today John Thornley introduces music from one of the oldest cities of Uzbekistan and discovers some of the lost musicians of Central Asia.
High over the city of Bukhara loom the imposing ramparts of the Ark, the citadel. From up here, I can see down below the minarets of Bukhara and the domed roofs of its covered market, glinting in the sun like a glistening honeycomb. Today, Bukhara is a provincial town in the southwest of the modern state of Uzbekistan, just north of the border with Afghanistan. But it was once one of the world's great centers of commercial and cultural activity. Bukhara il Sharif, Bukhara the Noble, an important staging post on the Silk Road to China, and the holiest city in Central Asia. It had 360 mosques and 80 madrasas. Those are Muslim seminaries, where young men might well spend 10 or more years of their lives studying the Quran. Today, looking down over the city, I can see many of those mosques and seminary buildings being restored. And some of them are back in use and full of young students, as Uzbekistan shakes off the memories of 70 years of Soviet control, and before that, several centuries of the rule of the emirs who had their court in Bukhara, in this very citadel where I'm standing now. One of the minarets you can see from the walls of the Ark is a grisly reminder of the power of the emirs, the Tower of Death, Poi Kalyan, from the top of which malefactors were thrown to their certain doom. And just a few minutes' walk from the gatehouse of the citadel is the Zindan, the prison, where you can still see the Siachat, the black well or bug pit. There, selected prisoners were kept, eaten alive by a plentiful and constantly replenished supply of rats, snakes and scorpions. In the last century, the prisoners in the emir's bug pit included captured British army officers. In the years before the cities of Bukhara, Samarkand and Tashkent were taken over by the Soviet army, the emir's victims included socialists and union organizers. But at the same time as all this cruelty was going on, the court of the emir saw a great flourishing of the art of music, both here at the citadel and at the summer palace outside the city. The musicians were very largely Jewish. In fact, there were many Jews in Bukhara 100 years ago. And to explain how this came about and why there are so few of them now left in the city, I have with me Razia Sultanova, an ethnomusicologist who's made a study of the different kinds of traditional music in present-day Uzbekistan. Razia, where did the Jewish musicians of Bukhara come from?
The Bukharian Jews has been living in Central Asia for many ages. They're supposedly the descendants of Babylonian and Persian Jewish. The language is Tajik or Persian, and most of them speak Uzbek and Russian as well. The Jewish population in Uzbekistan is decreasing. Now there are a lot of Jewish musicians there emigrated from Bukhara to New York, to America or to Israel. Unfortunately, because the role of Jewish musician was very important. For example, in 19th century, they protected Shashmakom when it was forbidden by fundamentalists of Islam.
The instruments we heard at the start of the program were the tar, which is a plucked stringed instrument, and the doira, a frame drum found everywhere in Islamic countries. But as well as instrumental music, there are various kinds of vocal music. not counting the calls to prayer from the many mosques of Bukhara. Razia, this next vocal music that we're going to hear, it sounds almost like a musical competition. What is it?
You're right. You're absolutely right, because Hakani, it's a competition of singers, the voice and the form of poesy and the quality of your voice and impression of your voice. They have it like improvisation. Sometimes it's woman and man, or usually it's only man. You know, they use the hand or the plate near the mouth. They use it for direction of voice, for improving the resonances. Of course, the daily life is very important for this genre as well. For example, in the time of communism, you've been able to listen to this genre with very, very communist words like greet our collective farm, or greet our Lenin or Brezhnev or Rashidov, etc.
Well, the one we're going to listen to isn't at all like that. The woman says, I long for your full-throated laughter. I'll take you in my embrace tonight. I'll saturate myself in the marrow of your bones. And the man says, come to my cabin, for I'm in pain. Without you, I weep day and night. You are a branch of fresh blossom, and I just want to be in the shadow of your eyebrows. That poetry, Razia, that poetry was in the Tajik language, wasn't it? But Tajik and Uzbek are totally different languages, are they not, in the same country?
Right. In the Transoxiana, in this era, always stay the populations like Uzbek and Tajik. Uzbek speak Uzbek language from Turkish group, but Tajik, they are speaking language from Persian group. It's not so similar. It's very, very different language, but the population are speaking both of this language, always.
But is it fair to say that, culturally speaking, the traditional poems which would be set to music would be in this Persian Tajik language?
In Bukhara area, of course, Persian language, Persian poetry.
Well, the music that we're going to hear now is called Shapandaz Se Golyar. Is that a Tajik or an Uzbek text?
It's Tajik poetry, and Ilyas Malayev, a well-known Jewish musician from Tashkent, sings it, and he's immigrated now to New York. He is a poet, he is an instrumental musician, and he is a singer as well.
Azra قدمت گردم یار زیر افتاری تو میگردم وای دادای دانی تنگی جامون خیلی اسرار را سی جان فضایش گرد هر یه شخوار را ماند زیروی لطفوس نشما ای پوران لار را ماند سراسر موجی گرسو پیچون تابی ما را ماند اگر برگردن افتد خیز ما را ماند اگر برگردن افتد خیز ما را چشمی آشنام رو ساری ای به چشمی آشنام رو ساری.
That was Chapandazi Gulyar, sung by Ilyas Malayev, one of a group of many Jewish musicians from the Central Asian city of Bukhara who found their way to Forest Hills in New York City. One of the great social traditions in Bukhara, as I know myself, having almost been roped into it, is the wedding ceremony, which takes place with an enormous party held by the family of the bride, and everyone who happens to be around is invited in.
You know, the wedding, for example, groom and bride, they have to see each other just in the wedding, not at all before. That's why the photo is so important thing for these stages.
So they only see a photo of one another before they meet for the wedding?
There are a lot of relatives who is preparing this marriage. That's why the wedding reception is so important, and traditionally in the area like Bukhara or Samarkand, every parents invited every relatives. For example, once in Samarkand I have been in the marriage with 500 person, but it was not so big marriage, not at all. One part of marriage, particularly the first one, it should be very, very old. You know, for bride it should be about 40 kinds of clothes on the wall, and everybody can see it.
The entire dowry.
Yes, and jewelry from grandmother and grandmother, etc. And so many bed linens.
When I was at a wedding down there in Bukhara the other day, I saw the bride and groom, who looked as if they were about 17, can't have been much older than that, and I saw them leaving together in the car. And the bride really was crying as if she was desperately unhappy. But I was told afterwards that this is a tradition and that the bride has to cry. She's expected to cry, and if she doesn't, everybody will be extremely cross with her. Is this true?
Yes, maybe, but it's not so obligatory. Sometimes you can see it, but it depends on the humor of bride.
Well, this particular wedding song that we're going to hear seems to be a very happy wedding. A friend has come from far away. Stand up, take him by the hand. Your eyebrows are like the tail of a snake, but even if you cut off my head with a sharp dagger, I shan't turn away from you. 6 times, 64 times, you've captured me with your eyes, your face, the curls of your hair. I'll gladly be the victim of your black eyes. I've nothing to give you in return except my life. which I'll happily sacrifice for you. My graceful one, the moon, I want to come. Of the Emir, whether here in the citadel or at the summer palace outside the city, every evening there would be performances for hours and hours with singers and instruments. What they would be performing would be these pieces known generically as shash makam, or six makams. But what is a makam?
I think makam is the system of idea with representation of whole world. Shash makam, like every type of high medieval art, concentrated the system of aesthetic notion, including the time of performance, the color, the senses.
So what you're saying is that each different piece of music was in a different mode, so to speak, and that it reflected a different attitude, a different color, a different time of day, a different season.
You know, it was the great system of makam performance. in the time about Tamerlane the Great. For example, Buzrug, it means the beginner. It means the greeting. It means the manly. It's where clear and light music, very optimistic.
What about the one we're going to hear now, which is called Makam Nazri Chargah?
You know, the name of these tunes and these kinds of makam now is lost. And that's why we can only guess what is it now. For example, Chargah, it means the scale with four notes, which were the main notes for this kind of makam.
I wondered if this was an example of the influence of Sufism, because the text says, I brought you two hearts, both melted. With one movement of your eyebrows, you destroy them both. I had two vessels of your blood in my heart, you destroyed both with a wink. Your two curly locks, each one became a noose for my soul. I had two homes in two worlds, and with one glance, the pourer of wine destroyed them both. It's a very mystical text, isn't it? It's almost as if this love poetry is a symbol for something else, an attitude to God or to religious ecstasy.
Yes, of course. For example, if you see the line, you are my love, it means you are my God. Far in the poetry, it means the love to God. And wine means the way to God. So, I have to say, every word from Sufi's poetry was with two significances.
So it was a code?
Yes.
Part of the Makam Nazri Chargah, with Abu Kai Aminov singing and playing the doira, and Yusuf Abramov playing the tar. Razia, was the tradition basically one of men singing, men instrumentalists, or were there women as well?
You are right, it's a very important question, because in empire time, the mainly musicians were always men, and women tradition, it started only just after revolution. And thanks to it, we have a lot of famous and very good singers now. For example, the queen of Makam is Barno Ishakova. She is living in Jerusalem now. Unfortunately, because there are a lot of young people who should be pupil of Barno Ishakova. But this tradition is interrupted now, and Barno, she is so far from Central Asia. For our young musician from Tashkent, Bukhara, and Samarkand, it's a shame. Makom is a very difficult kind of singing because it should be a long way from the first scale to the culmination. It's the most important place in the makom, and just in this place you can see the level of this artist, Barno Ishakova.
And that's the end of Lost Musicians in Central Asia. The producer, John Thornley, was talking to ethnomusicologist Razia Sultanova at the city of Bukhara in western Uzbekistan.